This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
If you log in to your AI assistant at, say, 2:00 p.m. next month to summarize a massive PDF, you might actually find yourself paying three times as much as you did at 8 a.m.
Oh, easily, yeah.
We are looking at the absolute end of the free compute era, and the geopolitical shockwaves that caused it are fundamentally going to change how you work day to day.
Right, because for the last couple of years, venture capital has basically heavily subsidized our inference costs. You know, the actual cost of running your prompts.
Just to capture market share, right?
Exactly, just to get you hooked. But that era is closing. We're seeing hyperscalers demanding an actual return on their GPU investments, while at the exact same time, the fundamental architecture of who builds these models and how they operate is fracturing globally.
Which brings us to why we're here. Welcome to today's deep dive. We are unpacking a really massive divergence happening right now in global technology, and we're pulling this from a July 1st, 2026 AI Daily briefing.
It's a dense briefing today.
It really is. And the mission for this deep dive is to figure out what this split means for you. Because the contrast here couldn't be sharper. You have the United States, which is increasingly locking its most powerful frontier AI models behind these really strict government approval processes.
Very regulated.
Highly regulated. But then on the exact same day, Chinese companies are just blowing the doors off that paradigm. They are releasing massive open source models trained entirely on domestic hardware.
It is a fascinating real-time experiment in how innovation, you know, routes around obstacles.
Yeah.
You place a massive influx of capital against a hard constraint, like, say, an export control. The technology doesn't just stop.
It finds a loophole.
It finds a new channel.
Always.
And today, we're not just looking at abstract theories. We are looking at the hardware constraints, the shifting global economics, and honestly, the highly practical shifts in how you will integrate these tools into your daily workflows.
So let's jump straight into the center of this hardware race. Yesterday, June 30th, a Chinese company called Meituan released a model called Longcat 2.0. Now, just for some quick context for you, Meituan is primarily a massive food delivery and local services company over in China.
Right, which makes this development incredibly striking, to be honest.
I mean, it's like if DoorDash or Uber suddenly dropped a world-class frontier AI model out of nowhere.
Exactly. It signals just how commoditized the core algorithmic science has become. You know, if a logistics company can marshal the resources to pull this off, the landscape is completely shifted.
And they marshaled some serious resources for this. Longcat 2.0 is a coding-focused model with a staggering 1.6 trillion parameters.
Massive.
And they completely open-source the weights on Hugging Face, meaning anyone can just go and download the underlying architecture today. But the absolute bombshell here is the hardware.
Yeah, this is the part that changes everything.
Right. They didn't use a single NVIDIA chip. They successfully completed both the pre-training and the inference phases on a cluster of 50,000 Chinese-made chips.
That detail right there is the geopolitical earthquake of this update.
Former lawmaker Kyungjin Kim actually pointed this out in our sources. He noted that this proves the dams of U.S. export controls are essentially leaking.
Oh, undeniably. Pre-training, a 1.6 trillion parameter model on alternative domestic hardware completely challenges the assumption that export controls alone could, you know, freeze this level of AI development.
It totally shatters it.
But we really need to look at the underlying mechanism here to appreciate what they actually accomplished. Because stringing together 50,000 inferior chips isn't just a basic hardware procurement problem.
Right. It's not just buying a bunch of servers.
No, it is a massive networking and software problem.
So break that down for us. Why is the networking the hard part there?
Well, think about what happens when you train a model of this size. You are constantly passing terabytes of data back and forth between the processors.
Like constantly syncing them up.
Exactly. In Western models, this relies heavily on proprietary networking technologies like NVIDIA's NVLink. It allows chips to share memory almost instantly.
Okay.
When you don't have that and you're trying to sync 50,000 domestic chips together, the latency, the delay in communication between the chips usually bottlenecks the entire system.
So they just sit there waiting for data instead of actually computing.
Precisely. Furthermore, the mean time between failures becomes an absolute nightmare.
Because with 50,000 of anything, something is always breaking.
Right. If just one of those 50,000 chips hangs or crashes, the entire training run can halt.
Wow. So the real breakthrough here isn't necessarily the domestic chips themselves. It's like the software stack and the fault tolerance systems that Meituan built to keep 50,000 disparate chips synchronized without the whole thing just collapsing.
That is the real innovation. They built a system robust enough to route around hardware failures in real time.
That's wild.
And to make it viable for actual use, they utilized a very specific architectural trick to keep it efficient.
Oh, right, the mixture of experts, or MoE structure.
Yes, exactly.
The sources note that while the model has 1.6 trillion parameters, it actually only uses about 33 to 56 billion parameters per token.
Which is a huge optimization.
I look at it this way, and tell me if this analogy works. It's not just a giant university with 1.6 trillion facs and professors. It's a university with an incredibly efficient switchboard operator.
Okay, I like that.
So when you type a prompt, that operator instantly analyzes your token and routes it only to the specific 50 billion professors trained to answer it, leaving the rest of the 1.6 trillion parameters completely asleep.
Right. They don't even wake up.
And that's how they save on compute.
That is a highly effective way to visualize it.
Yeah.
That routing mechanism is critical because it allows them to offer a massive 1 million token context window.
Which is just huge.
You could feed it a dozen massive textbooks or entire legacy code bases in a single prompt. And the switchboard operator keeps the processing costs manageable.
And the performance data proves this isn't just, you know, a vanity project for a food delivery app. Longcat 2.0 scored a 59.5 on the SWE Bench Pro.
That's a huge deal.
Which is incredibly impressive. For those following the benchmarks, SWE Bench Pro tests an AI's ability to solve complex, real-world software engineering issues.
Not just theoretical math, but actual coding.
Right. And a 59.5 actually outperforms GPT 5.5's score of 58.6 on real-world coding tasks.
So a delivery company, using zero Western chips, just open-sourced a coding model that beats one of the top models in the world.
It forces a complete recalibration of how we view the global AI landscape, doesn't it?
It absolutely does.
But, you know, Meituan is clearly trying to win by brute-forcing raw intelligence and massive parameter counts. But the U.S. approach is pivoting towards something else entirely.
A totally different strategy.
They are betting that raw intelligence is practically useless if you can't plug it into a real-world system. Because also on June 30th, Anthropic released a beta version of Claude Science.
Right, which is available to their Pro, Max, Team, and Enterprise users.
Yeah, and this shift toward workflow automation is how Western companies are choosing to build their moats right now.
Well, they have to. If you are keeping your most powerful frontier models locked behind regulatory doors, your competitive advantage has to come from somewhere else.
Right. You can't just release the raw model.
Exactly. So it has to come from how deeply and securely you can integrate your existing models into high-value enterprise workflows.
I do have to admit some confusion based on the sources, though, when I first read them.
Oh, really? Why is that?
Well, Claude Science isn't actually a new model. The briefing explicitly describes it as a workflow built on top of the existing Claude infrastructure.
Correct.
So is just adding a, quote, workflow really that big of a deal compared to a brand new 1.6 trillion parameter model? I mean, it feels a bit like slapping a new user interface on an old tool.
I see why you think that. But I challenge that by asking what actually creates value in a scientific setting.
Okay, fair.
Knowledge is only valuable when it can be reliably applied. A generalized 1.6 trillion parameter model might be able to write code and draft a nice email.
Right, the usual chatbot stuff.
But Claude Science is designed to act as a highly specialized scientific workbench. It completely changes the user paradigm from a smart chatbot into an autonomous research assistant.
Okay, so walk me through the mechanics of that. What is it actually doing behind the scenes for a researcher that a normal prompt just couldn't do?
Well, Claude Science comes pre-connected to over 60 scientific databases. We're talking genomics, proteomics, structural biology.
So real, deep, complex repositories.
Yes. When a researcher asks a normal AI to predict a protein structure, the AI can really only guess based on its static training data.
Like whatever it learned 2 years ago.
Right. But with Claude Science, it utilizes multi-step API orchestration. It translates your natural language prompt into specific database queries.
Ah, wait, so it actually goes out and pulls fresh data in real time.
Yes. And it does it completely autonomously.
Oh.
It queries a genomic database, extracts the relevant sequence, formats that sequence into a specialized string, feeds it into a structural biology database, waits for the render.
That's a lot of steps.
And then It synthesizes all of that raw output back into a human-readable analysis for the scientist. It automates an incredibly complex multi-step pipeline.
Okay, I get it now. It's the difference between having a really smart friend you can ask questions to versus having a fully trained lab technician who already has the security clearance and knows where all the beakers and chemicals are actually stored.
That's exactly it. It removes the friction. In fields like biology and chemistry, the bottleneck isn't usually raw intelligence anymore.
It's the tedious stuff.
It's the integration of massive disparate data sets. By building this workflow layer, Anthropic is basically turning a general-purpose AI into an industrial-grade scientific tool.
But, you know, whether you're running a 1-million-token context window with a Chinese open-source model or orchestrating these deep, complex scientific workflows through Anthropic,
there's a common denominator.
There is one unavoidable reality binding all of this together.
Mm-hmm.
The massive amount of computing power required.
Well, yes.
Someone has to pay for the electricity and the GPU wear and tear.
Which brings us to the most universally disruptive update for everyday users today. And it's the end of the subsidy era we discussed right at the top of the show.
Let's talk about DeepSeek. They are launching the official version of DeepSeek V4 in mid-July.
Very soon.
And the technical specs are impressive. I mean, they are making that massive 1 million token context window the default across all their model tiers.
Which is huge for developers.
Yeah, and they've improved agentic tasks, math, code generation. But the operational update is the real story here. DeepSeek is introducing time-based API pricing.
This is a watershed moment for AI economics, truly.
They're saying that prices will literally go up during, quote, peak hours, specifically from 9:00 to noon and from 2:00 p.m. to 6:00 p.m.
It's a huge shift.
They are basically introducing Uber surge pricing, but for artificial intelligence.
It is a brilliant, if very painful, market correction.
I mean, it had to happen, right?
It did. Consider the mechanics of that 1 million token context window we were just praising. In transformer architecture, the computational cost of the attention mechanism scales quadratically with the length of the context.
So it's not a linear cost.
Not at all. Processing a 1 million token prompt doesn't take 10 times as much compute as a 100,000 token prompt. It takes exponentially more.
Wow.
You simply cannot allow unbounded, cheap access to that kind of compute during peak business hours without bleeding money.
And look at those peak hours they set, 9:00 a.m. to noon, 2:00 p.m. to 6:00 p.m.
Standard corporate workday.
That is the workday across the globe. Everyone logs in, finishes their morning coffee, and hits summarize this massive code base or generate this quarterly report, and the server farms just melt.
The server load during those specific windows must be absolutely astronomical. Surge pricing is a clear signal that price competition is normalizing.
Even for the budget players.
Exactly. Even among companies that previously offered rock-bottom rates just to build their user base.
So what does this mean for you, the listener? Because surge pricing, layered on top of a geopolitically fractured tech ecosystem, creates an absolute minefield for your daily business operations.
It really does.
You can't just blindly connect an API or download an open source model anymore without fundamentally rethinking your risk management.
You really can't. And we actually have some very sharp commentary on this front from the briefing.
Yeah, let's get into that.
Regarding the API surge pricing, lawyer Kung-Jin Kim points out that if your business is doing any outsourcing, consulting, or software development, you have to completely restructure how you write your contracts.
Let's play that scenario out. Say you own a software agency, you quote a client a flat rate for a custom application.
Standard practice.
But your developers are pinging the AI to help write the code during normal business hours, which, as we just learned, are now peak surge hours.
Your profit margin literally evaporates.
Gone.
Lawyer Kung-Jin Kim warns that you must proactively include token unit prices and specific peak pricing clauses in your client contracts immediately.
You have to pass that cost on.
You have to account for the time of day the AI is being utilized. If you don't build flexibility into your billing right now, you are going to be facing massive disputes with your clients or your vendors when those API bills actually arrive.
That is a highly practical action item for anyone in the service industry, but I want to circle back to the first segment for a second.
About Meituan.
Yeah, Meituan's Longcat 2.0, because with a frontier level 1.6 trillion parameter model just sitting out there for free on Hugging Face.
It's tempting.
It is incredibly tempting for a developer to just download it and bypass the API costs altogether. Like, why pay surge pricing when I can run this locally?
It is tempting. But former lawmaker Kung-Jin Kim addressed this specific temptation in the report.
What did he say?
He stressed that downloading an open source model isn't like just downloading a standard software update. You have to review the data processing locations and the commercial use licenses with the exact same scrutiny you would apply to a binding legal contract.
Because open source doesn't actually mean, you know, do whatever you want with no consequences.
Far from it. Let's look at a concrete scenario. Many of these massive models have specific commercial use licenses that include poison pill clauses.
Poison pills?
Yeah. You might build an incredible internal tool using an open source model, only to realize 6 months later that the license strictly prohibits using it for financial services.
Oh, wow.
Or it demands you open source any proprietary software you build on top of it.
So your secret sauce is suddenly public.
Exactly.
Or consider the data processing side. If you're using a foreign API to interact with one of these models rather than running it locally, where is your data actually going?
A very critical point. Former lawmaker Kung Jin Kim highlights that mishandling this, especially with sensitive enterprise data, can lead to severe trade secret leaks.
Which is a nightmare.
If your prompt data is processed on servers located in a different jurisdiction, it may technically become subject to that foreign state's local data retention laws.
So you could be violating your own company's compliance protocols without even realizing it.
Very easily, yes.
And just to be entirely clear here, we are simply reporting these practical business and legal warnings from the source material. We aren't taking any political sides regarding U.S. or Chinese tech policies.
No, not at all.
The reality on the ground is simply that navigating two completely different AI ecosystems, one highly regulated and workflow driven, the other open source and hardware independent, it just requires a massive amount of legal and operational diligence.
It is purely about operational risk management.
Right.
Regardless of where the technology originates, the infrastructure is maturing and the costs of compliance are becoming very real for everyone.
All right. Before we wrap up today, we have a highly valuable, time-sensitive, aha nugget specifically for you listening.
Yes. Pay attention to this one.
If you are in the scientific research space or you know someone who is, you need to hear this. Remember Claude Science, the biological and chemical workflow tool from Anthropic we just discussed?
The autonomous research assistant querying those 60 databases.
Exactly. Anthropic is currently offering up to 50 research grants specifically for projects utilizing Claude Science.
That's amazing.
And they are giving up to $30,000 in computing credits per project.
$30,000 is a substantial amount of compute.
Especially at surge pricing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Especially considering how computationally expensive those multi-step API orchestrations get when you're pulling, you know, heavy genomic data.
It could fund an entire quarter of research, but the timeline is incredibly tight. Applications are due by July 15th.
That's right around the corner.
Selections are going to be announced on July 31st, and the actual project work happens from September to December.
So if your lab works with protein structures, genomic data, or complex chemical analysis, you need to outline your project immediately.
Don't wait on this.
Identify exactly which of those databases you plan to query and get that application submitted.
Because if you miss that July 15th deadline, you are going to be stuck paying for all of that heavy compute out of your own pocket or draining your existing grant money. $30,000 in free AI compute is a massive competitive advantage you just do not want to leave on the table.
It truly is the difference between accelerating your research by months or being permanently bottlenecked by your budget.
Let's take a breath and recap the journey we've been on today. We started with the export control dams basically being bypassed as Meituan solved massive networking bottlenecks to train a 1.6 trillion parameter coding model entirely on 50,000 domestic Chinese chips.
We then explored the U.S. pivot toward deep utility, examining how Anthropic's Claude Science transforms a general AI into a specialized automated workflow by orchestrating complex queries across all those scientific databases.
And then the stark economic reality check, DeepSeek introducing AI surge pricing, proving that the era of unlimited subsidized compute is officially over.
Being well-informed today requires extreme operational awareness. Yep. You have to read the fine print, whether that means scrutinizing the commercial license of a massive open source model to protect your trade secrets.
Well, watch out for those poison pills.
Or literally checking the clock on your wall before running a massive API batch to avoid peak surge fees.
It fundamentally changes how you have to operate day to day. Which leaves me with one final thought for you to mull over as you go about your work.
Oh, let's hear it.
We just talked about AI usage costing exponentially more between 9:00 a.m. and 6:00 p.m. If surge pricing becomes the global industry standard, how long until companies start forcing human employees to shift their work hours to the middle of the night?
Wow.
Just so the business can get cheaper API rates on the AI tools they need to do their jobs. Are we about to see the night shift make a massive comeback? Not for factory workers, but for desk workers trying to escape AI surge pricing.
That is a fascinating and slightly dystopian possibility, I have to admit. The technology that was supposed to liberate our schedules might actually end up dictating them more rigidly than ever before.
Just something to think about the next time you log in at 9:00 a.m. and the servers are melting. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you next time.
Take care, everyone. Keep exploring.
This program is provided by Lawyer Kyungjin Kim.